Bart and Logan are friends who met on the internet. Yeah, Logan and Tim are also friends who met on the internet. And Tim and Bart are buddies too. Now it's the three of them and you. Lots of danger at every corner, fighting androids and lots of monsters. Much more than a podcast. Well, I guess it's only a podcast. And now it's time for a podcast.
Ooh. Welcome to BLT Lunch Break number 26. This is Logan Seculum. I'm here joined by my buddy in the Chicagoland area, Mr. Bart Scott. How are you?
I'm good. Here I am. Here I am in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to lie to people and say you're, you know, downtown, you know, hanging out.
Well, it's I told one of my coworkers today that from my office window, I look out at, amongst other things, a Fairfield Inn and a Cracker Barrel. But across the tollway is Top Golf. Yes. Now, locals know exactly where I am, by the way. But as I just kind of quickly turn my head for a second, it looks like there's a mountain range in the distance because of the big giant nets that they have. And just for a split second, I think I'm somewhere else, somewhere much nicer with mountains. But
well, maybe we'll get you, right. We'll get you there.
I'm in Chicago.
One day we'll get you here. It's fine. You can chill out.
One day. We have to reference that on every episode now.
I know. Exactly. It's just going to keep coming back. Did you see, and we'll get into some stuff we need to cover. Did you see, though, in the news, the couple that went to every Cracker Barrel store or is about to complete their like 40-year run?
They've got one more to go. That means they were at one point just a few hundred yards from my window right now. I can see Cracker Barrel from here.
I mean, here's the thing.
Yep.
Like, every Cracker Barrel is identical. Like, they're not even.
Yes.
It's not like going to different restaurants or different chains where it's like they switch it up. Like, they're kind of known for it being like exactly the same. Like, the Cracker Barrel headquarters is close to us. And they actually have a mocked like store. So like what they do is the people who are like the merchandise people, they set up the whole thing and say, okay, this is exactly how we want it. All right, send that around to the stores. This is exactly how we want it. So other than maybe some wall hangings, which I think do change store to store, they are identical. So I'm a little bit it's an interesting thing to want to accomplish. Like your menu is the same. Everything is the same. You're just that. I don't know. I couldn't do it.
I mean, and the other thing I thought too, this is kind of mean, but they're in their 80s. I mean, after a while, couldn't you just take them to the same one? Would they know the difference?
Do they know they've gone
to? Now you're in Dubuque.
What if they haven't? What if they've gone to the same Cracker Barrel like 350 over and over times? And they're just like, here we are.
It's like the Truman Show.
Exactly. Because I mean, I've probably been to 100 Cracker Barrels in my life, I would assume. Just over the course of how many road trips I've taken in my 31 years of existence, there's a good chance. We have in Nashville, I've probably been alone to 5 different Cracker Barrels. Sure. So I mean, I don't feel like I've missed out. I don't look at that as a life goal.
The best part of the story was I read it on Yahoo, and the story starts off. They have a little like video, and it says there's a couple in wherever is attempting to make history. And I'm like, is this really history?
No, I mean this is the worst. It's the worst Guinness Book of World Records record. It's the one that you go, right. Well, I mean, you just drove a lot, is what I'm assuming, because. And you just understood you're going to get sent. I mean, look, I'm no Cracker Barrel hater. I love a good Cracker Barrel. I'm there fairly often.
This guy is my spirit animal because what he said, this touched my heart because I and my coworkers laugh at me. Sometimes when I'm just feeling a little blue or a little stressed, I will walk across the parking lot over to Cracker Barrel and just kind of walk through the gift shop. And just there's a smell inside a Cracker Barrel feeling. And it's very America. You just feel like you feel so American and so old fashioned kind of Andy Griffith, you know, it just feels good. So, and the guy said, I've never had a bad experience. I'm not even reading this. I've already memorized it. He said, I've never had a bad experience. And I always walk out feeling refreshed.
Yeah.
See, this man gets it. He is my spirit animal.
I don't disagree with that sentiment at all. I mean, again, I'm there fairly regularly. Like it's not just a road trip place for me. We go there often, but I mean, I'm trying to think of, is there like a place like that, that it'd be sort of like you being like, I'm going to every Rainforest Cafe. You know, like at the end of the day, there's some variation, but it's pretty much the same store to store.
They're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But Cracker Barrel is exactly the same. I mean, the they come off the Cracker Barrel assembly line.
Right. You just you can't even think of it as somewhere different. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, I guess there are some variances, but it's like I always feel good. I tell my wife this and she thinks I'm crazy. Maybe this is why we're friends too. It's like whenever I go to like a city that I'm unfamiliar with, but then I end up like at a Target or a Walgreens, I'm like, something feels right because it's like I'm comfortable here. This is my home. I know where I am. Well, we weren't going go ahead.
I will tell you, is there anything like it? When I was 9, the first time we drove to Disney, we drove down to Florida, we stopped at a restaurant that my grandparents somehow knew about. And I can't remember if it was in Tennessee or Georgia. I think it was in Tennessee, but close to Georgia is why I'm probably confused. And I know it was in a pretty hilly or mountainous region because I remember kind of going up and down. And we stopped at a restaurant, and I'm like 90% certain it was called the Country Bumpkin.
Okay.
And it was, to my recollection, now I'm about to be 42, so that's been, 33 years? It was like a Cracker Barrel, except it was like authentic. Like they weren't trying to be like Cracker Barrel. It was just an old country restaurant with a country general store attached.
That's awesome.
And all these old like gas station signs and a front porch with rocket. I mean, it was like the real deal. And I have tried to scour the internet to find any trace of it or where it was, and I cannot. So if anybody out there knows of the Country Bumpkin, I feel like it was off to the side of the road on some hill or mountain. But
do you think, I mean, I don't know about the Country Bumpkin, but there's a pretty popular one called the Dillard House. Do you think it could have been the Dillard House? Look that up and see. Because it is like, it's definitely touristy. It's pretty decent size, but it's off on the side of a hill. You climb, it's really pretty. They even have like a petting zoo area there, or at least they did. And you know, they have banjo pickers and people playing, and then they have a restaurant that's, like I said, kind of in that same kind of vibe as a Cracker Barrel.
This place, what I'm seeing looks too nice.
Okay.
It's like a stone building. Yeah, that's way too nice. My memory, and again, my memories are so fuzzy. I just remember my grandfather, who was a bit of a hillbilly, singing, "Hello, Country Bumpkin," the whole time like we were driving. For like an hour after we left, he would start singing, "How's the frost out on your pumpkin?"
The picture I'm looking up of the Dillard House doesn't look like the Dillard House I remember. They may have gone through some refurb here recently. The one I remember had like these like old, like almost Shoney's style domed windows. It was very big, but they've definitely done a refurb. It's out though. It's right on the border of North Carolina. It's from Georgia to North Carolina. So I thought maybe that's something. I haven't been there many years. My parents just went a few months ago. I'd like to go back soon. But yeah, those places are kind of here in Tennessee, we have a lot of places I think that pretend. Like there's a few restaurants here that like even as a joke, it's like a wink wink, have like autographs from celebrities that are fake. Like a new restaurant will put up like,
okay,
Porter Wagner signed this is the greatest burger in Nashville. And it's like a joke. But if you're not in on it, then it just seems like they're lying to you. But we do have a lot of those sort of country style newer places. And there are still some old ones. There's a bar that's kinda like that here called Santa's, which we may have discussed, which is in a trailer. And it is an old man with a big old beard. Well, beer as well. And he sells you beer out of a refrigerator for like $1 or $2. And it's like the most dive bar of any dive bar. There's karaoke. It's become a little bit touristy as well, but it's sort of one of the Nashville staples. But I don't know. Like, Country Bumpkin, guys, if you know about it, if my parents are listening to this, you know, if it's from Georgia to Tennessee, I feel like there's a good chance I should know about it. But there's a lot of little places off to the side. There's also the Smokehouse Lodge. Maybe that could be it. The Smokehouse Lodge is – it's owned by – it's also connected to Best Western. And it was a – trying to think what – Smokehouse is like a brand, like a barbecue brand. And it's their place.
Okay.
And it has like an old restaurant. And then this sort of, like you said, a kind of – it's in Mont Eagle, Georgia, which is sort of on the border of Tennessee and Georgia. And it has that – the inside of that has sort of what you're talking about, like
this looks more like a motel, too, though.
It is. I've stayed in the motel. I'm talking about like the restaurant and the the restaurant and the store kind of have that vibe. It's like a real Cracker Barrel feel.
It's possible. I'm trying to jog my memory, but again, that was 1984, so well, I've killed a few brain cells.
It may be gone by now, but you know, a lot of these places live on forever. I mean, you never know. So
yeah, it was old in 84. So right.
Wow. I'm trying to look through. The smokehouse is interesting. Will and I ended up staying there one night because we were – it's only like an hour and a half from Nashville. We were driving from Atlanta home, and usually that's not – usually you can make it. It's about 4 hours. You can drive home. But we got caught in like a hailstorm, and it was like an oasis on the side of the road was the smokehouse lodge. We were the only people there. It was very creepy. But we think we were leaving from Kevin Smith. We were going to see Kevin Smith, and he ended up ending really late. And by the time we got there, we're like, all right, we got to just – this is not safe because it's over these crazy hills. Because if you drive from Tennessee to Georgia, you get there's like about probably 15 miles somewhere around Chattanooga where it just all of a sudden it's just you went from like regular interstate to like you're going to fall off the side of a mountain interstate. So that's what it is. But guys, I did want to address something. We're like 10 minutes in. We were going to talk about this right off the top. Obviously, you know, Tim hasn't been with us the last couple of weeks as he has honestly had a lot of time issues and has gone through some stuff. I know if you follow him on YouTube, you've seen some of that. But unfortunately, he has decided to leave the show. You know, we're bummed about it, to say the least. And I don't want to make this sound anything other than the fact that we are not thrilled. We're not happy. We're happy for him to be able to do what he needs to do. And we're still very close friends. But know that, you know, it is something that he's going through and obviously trying to keep focused on what he's doing. And we want to wish him the best. And hopefully he'll pop back on, but I didn't want to let you guys know that. I know there's going to be a lot of questions that are raised due to that, but I just wanted to kind of, before you know anything gets any further, kind of quash those and say, you know, things are fine. Bart and I are going to move forward, and we probably will be looking for a replacement. Maybe we'll be announcing that in the next couple of weeks. But again, it's an interesting time for us as well. And what I would encourage you guys to listen, because I know a lot of people came and started listening just because of Tim, and we couldn't be more thankful for you all listening to us. You know, if you've enjoyed the show so far in these 25 weeks that we've done it, I would really hope that you would stick around and give us a chance and take a look at what we're going to do next, because we do have some great stuff planned and some really fun stuff. The show certainly is not going away, but we will be retooling, obviously, a little bit without Tim. And I don't want to dwell on it too much, Bart, but is there anything you want to say about that?
No, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. You just, man, I'm like, sorry, I'm struggling with a cough and a sore throat. But no, I mean, I just don't want anybody to say, oh, they kicked him off or he quit. We're all still very much friends. I still talk to him every day. So yeah. I just understand he's got a million plates in the air. And it's just, look, it's hard to find the time. I don't know if people that don't podcast don't realize it's hard to find the time. It's hard to find an hour to carve out of your day. You know, I'm doing it literally on my lunch break. So,
yeah, I mean,
you know, I haven't even recorded my own podcast that's just mine. I haven't done in a couple of weeks because it's just finding the time, you know. So sometimes that's why I record them while I'm driving to work. So
yeah.
But no, we loved him, and we're like you said, we're bummed, but we totally understand. So please don't just, you know, I don't be, and we let's keep the rumor mill quiet.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's why I wanted to address it head on. And we are going to move forward. And again, I don't want to spend too much time on this because you guys listen to this to laugh and to enjoy and to hear our talks. But you're right, Bart, that I don't know if people understand this, and it's hard to explain unless you are on this side of the microphone and doing it every week and with me editing them. And I do three different shows. It is much more time consuming. And it's much more of a commitment than you think because you're on. It's a full-time thing where you're on trying to entertain people. And when you have other responsibilities, I mean, for Tim, obviously he has his daily videos he has to put out. I mean, that is his gig. That's what he does. And he does a great job at it. For Bart and I both have day jobs and kids. It is not something that is easy sometimes, but we really enjoy doing it. Barton and I and Tim have had a great job, a great time doing it. And again, I make that plea one more time. Just say, give us a chance. And thank you guys for listening for as long as you have. The show's not going anywhere. I think you're going to like what we have planned. Maybe some familiar voices will be returning. So just keep a listen. And again, it is what it is. And we wish Tim the best at what he's doing. It's great. But yeah, and I think that's – I'm trying not to become too bummed out, but it is what it is, and I guess we move on. But, Bart, man, it's hard to go from here because I feel like it just – you know, we just lowered the – up the temperature in the room because, you know, it's not something we had planned on, and it's something that – you guys have been amazing, and the listeners have reacted to this show bigger than any show I've started. So it's pretty awesome to have it. And I just encourage you guys to see what's next and to give us a few weeks to kind of get back on track and to hopefully figure out the final details of exactly how we're going to move forward. But we assure you, we're doing it for you guys, the listeners, and we're going to make sure it's awesome. But I did just get back. I'll try to up the mood here from San Diego Comic-Con, which was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And that was something different. But, Bart, we'll get to mine. What have you been doing the last week?
Well, nothing that exciting.
Well,
boy,
I don't know.
Nothing really.
Nothing.
You've been of it, nothing.
You've been sitting here waiting for me to call you. I saw.
Yeah, basically last week.
I did see one tweet photo that you put out that you're like, my family thinks I look like a redneck. And,
oh, yeah.
And, I don't go sleeveless ever. And it's not that I don't want to. I just don't really feel like I have the arms to pull it off. You, on the other hand, no problem. You go full sleeveless all the time.
Well, I mean, I do go all the time. I don't know that I have the arms to pull it off, but I do it anyway.
You just don't care.
So, yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm not my family drags me to the public pool. Like, we bought pool passes this summer because we don't have a pool of our own, which, you know, it's the bane of my existence because I would love to have a pool, but my wife refuses to get one because it's just so much maintenance and whatnot. And
it is.
She doesn't like the way it kind of destroys the yard if you ever want to sell the house, whatever, you know, because we'd probably just do an above ground. You don't see a lot of in-ground pools here because the ground freezes. So, I mean, do see quite a few, but there's a higher risk of them getting cracked or whatever because our ground freezes and thaws and freezes, whatever. So a lot of above ground pools around here, which I'm fine with. You know, I'd love to have a nice above ground with a nice deck around it and that sort of thing, but she just doesn't want it. But instead, she goes and buys pool passes every summer for a couple $100. And I'm like, well, after a couple of years, we could just pay for our own pool. But
right.
It's the walking around. I call it the FBE, the full belly exposure. I don't love going to a public. That's why I don't go to water parks. I don't want to be walking around with my shirt off and stuff. But you know what? When I'm doing it, I just embrace it. I put on the America sleeveless, you rock the sleeveless. I put on my camo moon pie hat, and I just said, you know what, heck with it, I'm living it up.
See, now after our like 6 minute promotion of Cracker Barrel, I feel like we've had Duncan, we've had moon pie. It's only necessary that the next stop we have as a partner of this show is Cracker Barrel.
It's Cracker Barrel, yeah, absolutely.
Oh man, we'll be like sending out BLT branded the little pin games, the little T games of intelligence meters. That'd be awesome.
I'll be getting my Uncle Herschel's favorite for breakfast every morning with the cheesy potato, the cheesy hash brown casserole. Oh my God, it's so good.
It is. I go for the egg in a basket is my breakfast go-to, which, you know, is the egg cooked into the toast as if you needed the carbs, just like cooked right into it. And I don't know why. It's like it's like the perfect meal for me, but I get that, man. I'm right there with you.
Here's my one. If I had one thing about Cracker Barrel that I don't like, well, now we're gonna lose them as any chance of sponsors. That
thanks, Bart.
We gotta be honest here. We're not gonna lie to the people here. I don't, and I get it all the time, and I like it. I like their gravy, but it's not my favorite gravy for their biscuits and gravy. They have that sawmill gravy,
yeah,
which is basically just like a flour and water mixture. I'm more of a sausage. I'm just a sausage gravy guy, and we don't have them anymore. But I used to love. Do you ever go to Bob Evans? Do you have Bob Evans restaurants by you?
If we don't, we did. But yes, yeah, certainly. I know Bob Evans.
They were big red, but talk about looking the same. They all looked like big red barns back in my day.
Oh, yeah.
They had the best biscuits and gravy in the world. Their sausage gravy was so good. You could eat it with a spoon, just a bowl of it.
Well, yeah, we still got them. So we still got it. Downtown Nashville, baby. Rudy Circle, we got it. We got a Bob Evans.
Man, you got to go. If I come down, we're going to Bob Evans because I haven't been to one in years.
They're open.
I mean, I know there's probably a lot of like local joints, but I haven't had Bob Evans in so long. I got to go at least once.
The next time you go to Orlando, I'm pretty sure they're all over Orlando too. I'm pretty sure they're all over Orlando too. So
I might have to take an Uber next time.
You're like, you'll be Ubering from the. I'm staying here at the Grand Floridian. Where would you like to go? I'd like to go to the Bob Evans on 192, please.
Because the minivan won't take you there. It's off property.
Yeah, they're like, no, we're not taking you there. We'll take you to a better breakfast. Like, no, no, no. Listen, I've had your Disney breakfast 4,000 times.
No, you won't. You'll take me to a more expensive breakfast, not necessarily a better breakfast.
Yeah. I was in San Diego and went to Comic-Con for the first time. I have to say that I have like two things. Like San Diego, like one of my favorite places in the world now. I absolutely loved it. It's beautiful. Man, I couldn't get over it. I really dug the city. Comic-Con, on the other hand, real mixed bag. It is both the coolest experience and like the craziest and worst experience, just due to the fact that it's just, it's insanity. It's insane. I've never, like, some of the panels I went to, they were great. You sat down, you enjoyed it. I saw, like, Kevin Eastman, who created the Ninja Turtles, do a panel. And
sure.
I saw some really cool people. I ran into Butch Hartman, who I'm friends with, and we did, like, a video together. And, like, those kind of things were cool. And I didn't realize that that kind of happened at Comic-Con, that there's almost like an industry conference happening side of it. Like, it's not just a fan conference. Like, fans are probably the majority, but there is, like, a group of people that are there to do business. And that got my intrigue going for maybe going again. But, you know, to go on the expo floor was genuinely shoulder to shoulder with people. And if you did not, unlike every Comic-Con I've ever been to, where I could go booth to booth, you look at what they have, cool, moving on. This is 5,000 booths or so. And maybe a little less than that, but thousands of booths, I'd say. I don't know. It felt like that. And 150,000 people, you know, converging on this little space. And if you didn't know exactly where you were going, you got lost and you couldn't. It felt like you just were walking in a straight line, shoulder to shoulder with people. And then occasionally, like, oh, there's the cast of Teen Wolf. And like 50 people all of a sudden, or 100 people, start screaming and tearing at people, and security is pushing you down. Like, it's insanity. I've never really experienced anything like it. Like, I've done conventions before, but nothing like that. And it was fun. I mean, I guess it was fun. We showed the movie. That was nice. Not as high as attended as I would have liked, but you know what? We were in San Diego Comic-Con. That was cool. We got to go. We get the pictures with the background, so it looks like it looks real neat. But, and one of our BLT listeners, I have to say, came out to the screening, so I want to say thank you so much for coming out and saying, hey, that was really cool and a really fun thing. But, man, I don't know. Like, I didn't buy much because a lot of it is stuff you can see but not buy. I met Ric Flair, the Nature Boy. I met Lloyd Kaufman of the Troma films, Toxic Avenger and all that. That was the highlight of my trip, though. He signed this awesome Toxie poster for me that got, like, pretty much destroyed on the way home, which really bumped me out. I talked to him about filmmaking for a little bit. That was a neat experience. I'm trying to think what else got – that was kind of it. I saw Stan Lee. Like, I got very close to him, but I didn't really get to talk to him. I did get to kind of meet Kevin Smith. So there you go. Finally. It sort of happened.
What do you mean it sort of happened?
Well, so this will happen. So we go see, I go see Hollywood Babylon, and I went with, which is his podcast, Live with Ralph Garman. And I got to thank Ralph Garman, too. He retweeted a tweet I gave to him that promoted the screening. I wish more people had showed up from that tweet, but I have to thank him. And I went to see Hollywood Babylon. It ended about 12:30, started at 10:30, went to 12:30. And I was like, I told my buddy who I was with, who was, he's the intern on BYOCB, a podcast in Orlando. I said, I got to get out of here. I get back to my kids. And my kids and family were all out there, like, essentially more on vacation. Like, they were at the beach. They weren't really going to the con. My wife went for a half day to the con. Not her thing, really. And then she went to our screening. So I like run upstairs because it's down in this like little cavern. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get out of here before everyone else does. And Kevin kind of beelines past us. Like, we see him, like, come out of the door. Like, he's like, thanks. Okay, goodbye. And, like, tells his staff. He's like, oh, I'll see you guys at 6 a.m. You can tell, like, he is going nonstop during Comic-Con. Super nice to his staff. I can say that. Like, he was super friendly and super nice to them. But he clearly did not want to, like, stop and talk to fans because he would have been there all night.
Sure.
He hopped in his car, which was fine. I was in waiting for my Uber just, like, in front of it. And he just rolled down his window. I was like, hey, guys, how you doing? It was, like, me and one other guy. I was like, good. It was, like, it was a great show. He's like, thank you so much. That's awesome. I'm glad you're coming. He's like, I got an early morning, but I appreciate it. And I was like, awesome. Thank you so much. And then he just pulled away. So that was
it. You should have said real quick, you owe me a roll.
I know. And I told my wife, I was like, I blew it. But I also don't want to come off like a crazy person. If I had, like, more than 30 seconds, I probably would have said something. And I probably would have said also, you know, I have a movie playing at Comic-Con. You want to come? I kind of blew it in that one, but I got very like starstruck, not even starstruck, but just like caught off guard. Cause I was like, okay, he's in his car. He's going. And then he rolled his window down. Like, okay, this is cool. So I got to meet Kevin, met Lloyd Kaufman, met a few other people, there, Stan Lee. So from that, I like checked off a bunch of boxes of people who I really love, Kevin Eastman and some of these other guys. But that being said, I don't think I would go back to Comic-Con ever as a fan. Like, I just don't. I mean, I tried to get into the Riverdale panel, And the line, when I tell you that it went out a door, outside, down a staircase that wrapped around, and then down blocks of road to get into ballroom 20. And this, because I guess later on they were doing like The Simpsons and a bunch of other big ones, and they don't clear out the room after each panel. So people just get there every day. And it was just, man, I don't think I'm going to get, like, I'm a fan. I'm a hardcore fan of a lot of stuff. I'm not that level of fan. Like, I definitely was outfanned by all of these guys. Yeah.
The only time they clear that hall out is when J.J. Abrams announces they're doing a free concert right down the street.
Yeah.
Remember that a couple of years ago?
I do.
When he did that right before Kevin Smith was supposed to go up and do his speech, yeah. his Q&A, and everybody left.
So I'm going to say this. Look, I've always been open and vulnerable, so I'll be open and vulnerable, guys. That's kind of what happened before our screening. So I'm sitting there, and I had to have my moment. Like, it was a pretty big bummer. So like 150 people had registered that they were coming to the screening. So I was like, I felt good about this. We get there. I'd say there's about 150 people in the room. And I'm like, this is awesome. They're doing a panel. Panel wraps up. And as soon as that panel wraps up, about 100 of those 150 people stood up and walked out. It was like, oh. Like, it was one of those moments of like, well, I guess we're going to do it anyway. And like, even the woman was like, do you want to intro this? I was like, yeah, I'm here. I flew across the country for this. And by the end of that time, the movie started, there was about 60 Pride people there. So it wasn't horrible, but it was in a room of about 500 seats. I'm okay with being honest and say, now I've had that moment as well. And it's a bit of a gut punch, to say the least, but you deal with it as someone who does this stuff. You know, it's now the next step. It's all right. We went to San Diego Comic-Con. All right, how can we achieve the next step of that? How can we now say, all right, let's do something that – which is hard to say, come watch your movie when you're in Comic-Con, like, because it's just not why people are there. But a good group showed up. I have to say again, thanks to everyone who did, because there were a couple listeners and a few of all the other podcasts I do too, and a few other people really did show up, and our wives that were there. It was me and Dylan who wrote the songs. He produced the movie. But yeah, it is – it's a weird moment. It's a weird moment when that stuff happens. And I felt bad somewhat for the people who, like, I came from Nashville. There's people that came from Russia who to show their movie. There's people that came from all these cities. And then they, you know, I don't know how their attendance was, but I assume not significantly different than ours. And it was a bit of that, like, man, I don't know how I had a great vacation with my family, so I cannot take that away. And I had a good con, but I don't know if I had flown all the way there from another country to watch it in a ballroom of a Marriott with, you know, a couple dozen people, if I would have been pretty bummed. But, you know, it is what it is. And you keep you got to move forward and come up with what's the next thing you're going to do, because you can't just wallow in, oh, well, people didn't show up. Doesn't matter. People did show up, number one. Some of the screens we've played in at some of these film festivals hold about 60 or 70 people. That's a typical, like, indie theater size. But when you're in a room of 500, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But I also went to Disneyland for two nights.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was hell on earth. It was more people than I could. I kind of fell out of love with Disneyland. You know, we don't talk parks about this. So the California Adventure was pretty good. Like, it wasn't too bad. And like, I got my boy who's sitting here with me. He got to do Radiator Springs Racers, and he loved it. And that was awesome. We were having a good morning. And then it all just kind of, as soon as we crossed that park and went we wanted to meet Groot. It was a 2.5 hour long wait to meet Groot. So like, okay, we're not going to do that. Then we went to the Disney Junior Dance Show. That was a lot of fun. Kids loved it. Then we crossed to Disneyland, and I have never seen so many people. And probably it's not different than like a Disney World day, but it's so cramped at Disneyland where it felt like Comic-Con again. Like, you were just touching people, and it was so many people, and it's sweating. We couldn't get on anything. And eventually, towards the end of the day, we were able to get on a few rides, meet Mickey Mouse, and do that. But man, I love Disneyland Resort. I love the hotel. I love the Downtown Disney. I love California Adventure. And I love Disneyland the park. But the crowd control there was just – it was obscene. Like, it was without a doubt probably the worst day at a Disney park I've had just due to that. I ended up going back – because I wanted to do Guardians of the Galaxy. That was like one of the main reasons I really wanted to go to there. And we couldn't do it when I was at California Adventure with my kid. And we were going to go back and do it in the afternoon. But we were just so exhausted by like 4 o'clock. We're like, we're done. And let the kids go home. And then around 10 o'clock, I went out. Park closed, or 9 o'clock, park closed at 10. And I got in line over a 60-minute wait to ride Guardians of the Galaxy. by myself, but it was so it was kind of a little bit of a damper to the trip, but
you did ride it, right?
I did. Just man, I wanted to. She didn't get to do it, but I rode it. I went out there at, like I said, I got there right around closing, got in line. It was a 70-minute wait. It only ended up being about 30 minutes because by the time they closed, like once they closed the park and then more fast passes were available, the line flew, which made me kind of be curious of like, is it worth having this fast pass? Like, is it mm-hmm. beneficial? Like, is fast pass, like, I've never really thought about it that way because usually I'm like, oh, fast pass, great, fly through the lines. But I've never been there where the transfer happened. Where FastPass completely ended, and then to see how fast the line could fill up. Because when there was no FastPass, it went from we were kind of trudging along the outside queue to all of a sudden 10 o'clock hit, and I was probably on the ride 5 minutes later. And it was crazy. It was a lot of fun. It was cool. That the Guardians kind of ended it on a very positive note for me. I left the Guardians ride. I felt happy. We had a good Mickey waffle breakfast the next morning, but it was time to come home. And that's my – it's my weekend review, and I enjoyed the Guardians ride. I know it's getting some love and some hate. I thought it was a lot of fun. Don't go on it with a full stomach, though. I'll tell you that.
Well, do you think the change improves it from what it was?
Well, I had never done Tower
their version
California, so
yeah,
I was expecting. And spoilers, if you guys are listening, I was expecting the whole like ride portion of Tower of Terror, but done for Guardians. I didn't realize you're just in the elevator shaft. Like there's no part where your elevator goes out and goes through the ride part.
No.
So I didn't.
Yeah, they only got half a ride basically when they built that thing the first time.
Yeah,
which is why a lot of people aren't that upset about the change because they didn't like what they had anyway. Once somebody from California rides the one at Walt Disney World, it's like, geez, we got ripped.
But, yeah, and I could see that because it's a pretty short ride. It's hysterical. And just the concept of it is really funny, and you drop a lot, ton. I mean, I would guess between 10 and 20 times you drop. And starting with, almost immediately as the ride begins. But it's a really fun concept. It gives me, they could have shot footage that works, but the way this is set up, unless they're doing something really close to the Tower of Terror, or close to an elevator drop ride, I don't see how, I feel like for what they're going to do at Disney World, it's got to be completely different. Because this doesn't, the way they've built the story doesn't make any sense. Like, the way they've shot the footage that you see on the screens doesn't make any sense, really, unless you're in this kind of environment. Because it's very physical humor. It's just loud, blaring music. And I'd say, unlike Tower of Terror, where, I kind of scream my way through it and kind of it's a little spooky. This, you scream and laugh your way through. So it's so ridiculous that you're just like, this is hilarious. Like, I'm going to throw up, but it's hilarious. So, yeah, that was my Guardians of the Galaxy experience. I don't want to get into so much detail, but it was cool. The line was cool, small. I was expecting a lot more of the collector's museum. There wasn't a whole, it was one room. And then one room and a pre-show room. So it's I was expecting to walk through this whole thing. It was nope, here's your one little room that I'd seen pictures of. Here's your pre-show. Get on your elevator. And it was cool. But have you done Tower of Terror there before?
No, I never have either. So
yeah, so I just
I was curious.
Yeah, I can't. Now, I'm not the biggest tower at Florida apologist. I don't think it's not something I do every time. But I also am not a drop ride fan. That's not my thing. But for the Guardians, I was going to do it. And I have to say, though, if this was there, there's a good chance I'd be doing it a lot more because it was so much more fun than Tower. It was a lot – I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I was smiling and laughing, which is weird when you're dropping in an elevator continually.
Mm-hmm.
You almost anticipate it so much that it's just hilarious.
Well, right. That's always the problem with that ride. Oh, God, when's it coming? Well, I'll tell you, I did something the last time I – because I'm the same way. I don't ride Tower of Terror every time. In fact, I don't even go to – Hollywood Studios every trip, but I went in September last year when I was out there for your event, as a matter of fact, and I did something kind of weird, but it was also kind of cool and interesting. It's like if you've ridden Tower a lot, or if anybody goes to Walt Disney World and you get to ride it more than once, one time you're riding it, instead of looking ahead, straight ahead as most people do when you're dropping and going up, look up. It's just a very different sensation, and you see the roof of the attraction. You can actually see light.
Interesting.
I don't know how it's just weird. When you're looking straight up, but your body's going up and down, it completely changes the sensation. And it actually felt less frightening and more exhilarating, yeah, at least to me. So, and maybe I'm just a weirdo, but you should try that sometime.
Yeah, I will do it. I probably will go on it. See, my boy's not. What is weird is he's tall enough. He's well tall enough to do it, but like I don't think he should be.
right, exactly.
Like when I was on the Guardians ride, like there was like a 4-year old next to me. I'm like, this is crazy because the fact that you do have that weird, you only have the seatbelt and there's no like bar in front of you to hold on to or anything. It's just there is something about that ride that is much more disorienting. And when you're with the Guardians, I mean, spoiler alert for those who go. I mean, genuinely, the ride starts with. So the thing is, Rocket's trying to break you out, and Rocket breaks the alarm. And as soon as he does that, like it hits into the music, and like we had the one that Groot dances to at the end of the first movie, the Jackson 5 song. So and that changes ride to ride. So he hits it, and as soon as like wow, ba dum ba dum ba da 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 da, everyone starts dancing. He's like, here we go. And then I mean, it is less than 10 seconds into the ride, and you do it drop, and then you continue to do that for the entire length of the ride because you're dropping to different sections of kind of the story. So like it opens up, you see a screen. Oh, no, go. And then you fall again. Then it goes back up. And then there's another part of the story. So it's really funny and ridiculous. But because you're immediately in this drop ride, it's unlike anything I had ever experienced from a drop ride. There was no anticipation. Instead, it felt kind of like the Doctor Doom's Fear Fall if they did that 20 times. it was nuts. But I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
And but I don't see that big. I know we don't talk. We're talking theme parks more than ever. That's what I did this week. I mean, I don't see that
you
being
were just there. We kind of.
I don't see that being the story that they implement into Epcot. Just it. I don't see how it makes sense.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's kind of cool, but also curious is that I mean, for those listening that aren't Disney nerds like us, where they announced 2 weekends ago that at the D23 convention there's going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy attraction at Epcot, which has a lot of people up in arms.
Yep.
But I'm torn about it because I'm extremely excited to get a Guardians ride, but I also have very sentimental feelings about the ride it's replacing, Universe of Energy,
for sure.
Even though it's not a good ride anymore. I mean, it never really was except for 2 minutes of it, but that's the 2 minutes of it is what drew me to Epcot in the first place when I was 9 years old.
Right.
So the dinosaurs, but the way the building's laid out, it's not a tower like Tower of Terror. So it's going to be a completely different attraction. We just don't know what. So it's exciting and also kind of frightening. What are they going to do? I don't know. I mean, I imagine it's going to be a lot of screens, just like the one out there. But
yeah,
it is cool. Like, because I've always said when I ride the Tower of Terror at Walt Disney World, like, why don't they have like little something going on when the thing between drops, when it slows down? There should be something like scaring you. There should be a projection there or something. But yeah. So it's cool that they're actually incorporating that idea into the Guardians one, where you do see things as you're slowing down and stopping and drop again. That's cool.
Yeah, it was almost like little sketches. Like you were seeing bits and pieces of this story of them breaking out. And so you'd see like, oh, no, a moment. And all of a sudden, like, everything's good. Then you'd see like a big monster like swing in and grab them. And as soon as that happens, you drop. And so that part I loved. Yeah. I thought that was excellent. Really funny. Really well done. I was very pleased with it. What I do like also about it, which is unlike a lot of rides, and you can see that pretty much some of the Potter rides are kind of the only ones I can think of off the top of my head, that it is a live-action movie, and they have the entire cast. I don't know if it's Bradley Cooper doing Rocket. That seems like – it doesn't really sound like him perfectly in the pre-show, but it's definitely Chris Pratt. And it's definitely Batista, and it's all the cast members of Guardians of the Galaxy in character. And the advertisement, because it was mainly Rocket and Groot, I was a little like, oh, are they going to be kind of off in the distance, out of focus? But I like that it's like, no, they are in it. They're in the pre-show. Benicio del Toro's in the pre-show as the collector. Like it is, it feels like part of the story more so than, let's say, even like when they had Back to the Future, the ride, when it's like they have a couple people, you know, or they have sort of the B-level characters, or they have, you know, a lot of times in those rides, or they don't at all, and they just work around it. I like that it felt like you were in one of their adventures, so it was cool. I liked that a lot. It kind of ended on a good note. Also, we had a pretty good flight back with the kids, which is always a good thing. And now I'm home trying to recover and figure out what the crap we're gonna do next, man. I don't know.
What's the next movie now? Yeah, well, James Gunn directed those scenes too for the ride. The director of the movie directed the scenes for the ride. So, in fact, I don't know if he did it while they were filming the movie or if it was actually something separate. But somebody asked him on Twitter what his involvement was, And he said, I worked with the actors and I directed the actors in all the live action footage. So
yeah,
like, that's pretty awesome that he's, I wonder if he'll be that involved in the Walt Disney World one. Who knows?
I hope so.
I guess we'll find out.
And to bring it all back around, James Gunn, first movie he did, Romeo and Juliet, back with the trauma entertainment.
Oh, that's true.
There you go. Lloyd Kaufman, by the way, very happy to tell you that he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. He told a couple people while I was in line, like, yeah, have you seen my cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't even remember.
He's a prisoner in the breakout scene when they're trying to break out of prison.
Oh.
In the prison. You can see him. Like, if you're looking for him, it's like very noticeable. He's like front and center, almost full frame of him having a moment.
I think I do. Now that you say that, I think I do remember thinking, oh, that guy looks familiar.
Yeah. Well, it's an old Jewish man there for some reason in this prison. He was super nice.
More noticeable than Jimmy Buffett in Jurassic World.
Yeah, that one's taken me a couple watches to find him. It's like, come on, you can't get.
That's funny. I saw it right away, and I told my son that he didn't. It's like, look, it's Jimmy Buffett, but he didn't know. And then I was like, well, maybe it wasn't. And then like a couple days later, it broke on Twitter. I'm like, I knew it.
Yeah, I was.
Like, why would he pick up two margaritas? You know,
you're right. I wish it would. I just totally had missed it the first time around, but I saw it the second time. Not quite as obvious as it. What was he in Congo? Is that where he was the pilot?
Yeah, he was a pilot in Congo.
That one's very clear. Like, he has like lines.
Yeah, right. He's also in the movie Hook, but I mean, it does not look like him. Like, every time I watch the scene, I'm like, that's him? But they say it's him. He tries to steal Robin Williams' shoes when he first gets to Neverland.
Oh,
Again, it's a split second. Yeah. He's in there briefly.
A lot are they made by that, you know, Hook, I think was Spielberg. But a lot of them, like the Congo director, is the same as Jurassic World, right? Or something like that, a producer. Like somehow
they're all Frank Marshall productions.
That's right.
Even Hook.
Yeah. So they're
Frank Marshall was Spielberg's partner, or at least not equal partner, but he worked for him for many years. And he and Buffett are really good friends. So
he's like the like the guy from Cheers that's in all the Pixar movies, like John.
John Ransom, exactly. Ransom. Yeah,
he got to have him in there.
Well, you know, he's had a recurring role on the new Hawaii Five-0.
Jimmy
the
Buffett,
last few years too. He pops up like once or twice a season now as his own character, Frank Bama.
That is awesome.
The pilot.
I had no idea.
Well. It's awesome until you watch him because he's not a very good actor. And they actually give him pretty sizable parts. And it's kind of like, I feel like I'm just watching Jimmy Buffett, like reading words off a cue card.
Yeah.
But it's still cool.
That's what I think I talked about before when I saw Jimmy Buffett do Crossroads here with Zac Brown. I was like, had he never heard the Zac Brown songs? Like, I mean, it was a lot of times like he was not singing the right melody at all. Like, it was like, it didn't make any sense. But I do love him probably more than I should. But I want to see that. I watched the first season.
He doesn't
season.
Sing the right melody to his own songs. So.
That's true. Yeah. The first season of Hawaii Five-0, I really enjoyed. And for some reason, my wife and I did not continue to watch it. I don't know why, but now I got to go back.
We watched the first probably two seasons. And then same thing. They started backing up on the DVR. I don't know. And with recent news, I actually had thought about going back because they're all on Netflix. But Chin Ho and I can't remember the girl's Grace Park's character's name out. They're not returning. I don't want to watch it anymore.
I didn't know that.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. I didn't. I'll be honest and say that I did not know it was still going. I thought it had ended. So.
CBS has a history of shows like that last for years, and I don't know who. I mean, JAG, CSI, all these shows. I don't know who's watching them.
Yeah.
What's the one with Mark Hummer or Mark Harmon? What the heck is the show he's on? Is that NCIS? Like, I don't know anyone that watches that
it's
show.
It's one of the most highest rated shows on TV, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the Midwest. I think now I know where you're in the Midwest, but I mean the real Midwest, like the not city Midwest. I think they're all watching.
Well, and
I think like Nebraska is watching it.
Right. And it's the Midwest over the age of like 50, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Retired Midwesterners are, it's like why Jay Leno is always number one. Like they are very loyal in a good way. It's very well. I work sometimes in the Christian music industry. I haven't done that in a long time, but they kind of say like, if you have a big hit in Christian music, somewhat with country music as well, not as much now, but specifically, let's say from the mid 2000s and before, if you were to have a hit or at least a couple hits, like your fans are so loyal and will be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, I mean, Travis Tritt, who I've worked with multiple times. I mean, he hasn't had like a big radio hit just because country music isn't his style anymore in somewhat in a bummer way, because honestly, that's the kind of country music I like. But he can still sell out giant amphitheaters because the fan base, one, he had a string. He had, he didn't have like one hit. He had a dozen hits more than that.
He had a ton of hits.
Yeah, I mean, that's different. But like for a lot of these guys, I think that's similar in the rating situation. I mean, I think somewhat that's even true with like professional wrestling. Like we talk about that a lot, is that once you kind of hook someone, they're very loyal viewers and will continue to watch or continue to listen. And I'm kind of like that too. Like, I think we always text back and forth about like random 90s bands when you're like, hey, I think probably the most random text I ever got for you, which is not something that I think what is that obscure. It's like, hey, do you happen to know Edwin McCain? Because it's like there is something I think that's in a lot of us that is very loyal, especially to a specific time period in our lives. And I think that's why those shows last as well. It's like if you can hook them, but they can't be cheap to make. And that's the thing. It's not like these are shows that are NCIS and Hawaii Five-0. These are not cheap productions. So I don't.
Yeah, but like you said, the people that are watching them have money. They have disposable income, and they're people that are pretty. I mean, I'm going to paint with a very, very broad brush. So forgive me. But if I had to guess, I would say they're probably more conservative. They want to be entertained, but they don't want you to push the limits. So like, they're not going to go see a Quentin Tarantino movie or a Martin Scorsese movie, but here's a cop show with a lot of action, I say in quote, for their taste.
If Gary Sinise is in it.
Don't cuss.
Great.
Gary Sinise is in it. Nobody's cussing. Nobody's naked. And there's not a lot of blood, but it's got just enough action to make it kind of exciting for them, for their lives. And then, so yeah, like you said, they'll stick with it. And they're the people that those advertisers want to hook because they've got the money to go buy the product. So
well, there you go.
Yeah. That's the same people that kept 2.5 Men on the air for so long, because those are the people that would find it funny. Yeah. Me? Oh, I don't get it.
My grandfather, before he passed, and obviously he just passed recently, but before then he was a 2.5 Men like lifer. Like he all loved it so much. He started wearing the bowling shirts. Like he was, it was in. And he was in his, at the time, well, probably when it started, that's why he was 82. So he probably started when he was in his late 60s, maybe early 70s. And probably late 60s, and lasted so long.
Was it that long? I don't know.
What year did it start?
I don't know. I guess we could, if only there was a machine we could type the question into. Let's see.
Let's see. 2.5 Men. It was a long time ago, sir. It ended a couple years ago. So it started in 2003. So it was 15 years ago. So yeah, I mean, he died. He's 82. And so yeah, so somewhere. 72, yeah, so he was in his mid-late 60s.
Did he hang in there for the Ashton Kutcher years?
I don't know. We never had that discussion.
I'm curious what his opinion would have been.
I don't know. I think he was kind of a Sheen guy.
Which is amazing because, again, if I'm right about these target audiences, like these are people that would have hated Charlie Sheen in his personal life. They would have thought he's a maniac, but they love the show.
But he's hilarious.
Yeah, I guess.
People loved him, and, man, I don't know. I got to find something new though to watch. We're kind of in that summer slump now. Of like, there's nothing. My wife and I get home. We're like, what do you want to watch? It's late. The kids are asleep. Well, we've watched, I feel like, every Netflix series that isn't like horribly depressing.
That's the thing. I have a tentative reservation, even though I'm having a hard time with it myself because it's so bleak. But my wife started watching this new show on Netflix called Ozark with Jason Bateman and Laura Linney.
Yeah, I've seen like the image, but I haven't clicked on it.
It's very good, but I don't know if it's so bleak and just dark and depressing. It's Jason. It's not typical Jason Bateman. It's not. If you're expecting Arrested Development or, you know, Jason Bateman being witty and sarcastic, there is some of that in there, which is amazing because he works in a bit of his – because he produced and directed. He directed the first episode. I don't know if he directed everyone, but he produces it too. And it's very cool to see him in a role like this, but oh my gosh, is it like – again, it's not for when the kids are in the room.
Yeah.
But
Amanda got mad at me.
It's hard.
Amanda got mad at me for the ending of The Ranch, as if I had some way, like, because it ended on a cliffhanger. If I had some way to have known that, and she was like, "Why do you do this to me?" And that's a stinking 30-minute sitcom with Ashton Kutcher and the other guy from that 70s show,
Danny Masterson.
Danny Masterson, who's great in it, and Sam Elliott. It's a great cast. I actually really enjoy the show, but each season has so far ended on a cliffhanger. And this one did, and she was so mad at me. I mean, it did end kind of in a bleak way, like you said. Not bleak. I don't want to spoil it for people. Oh, sorry if I already did. Ended in an interesting way to where you weren't, like, there was no resolution. I'll say that. No resolution to where you were. So now you have to wait around for another season, and it's a bit of a bummer. It's kind of like the Stranger Things 2. Now, I'm wondering about that, because that was something that they promoted hugely at Comic-Con. And Stranger Things kind of wrapped up pretty tightly. Like, they left a couple loose ends. So I love the trailer for Stranger Things 2. I think it looks like the Ghostbusters movie I've been waiting for my whole life. But I am curious how it's going to be with the fact that, like, you guys, I don't know if, like, they made sure just in case they didn't get, like, a return, that they had finished it and tied it in a bow and kind of left it pretty close.
Right.
And now they're like, well, we got to untie a few things. I think that happened on Once Upon a Time a few times also, where they're like, oh, the show's over. Oh, we got renewed. Okay. Remember last season? It was a dream. And then I stopped watching.
That was a show I tried to stick. I kept trying to come back to it. It
I wanted
to love it, and I just couldn't. And again, that's another one. I just, like, all the stars are not coming back this year. Just like a couple of them. Like the bad girl, or whatever, Lana Parrilla, who plays the Evil Queen.
Evil Queen.
And I think Robert Carlyle.
Yeah.
And right. Hook, yeah.
Yeah.
And then
I don't know.
Rumpelstiltskin. But I don't know how they're going to do a show without their three protagonist leads, but whatever.
They always push that too far.
I fell out of it a long time ago.
Me too. We like binged watched a bunch of seasons, and then there was like a very, what felt like a very good conclusion to the show. Like, clearly they thought this was going to be the final episode. I forget what season it is. They didn't really leave any room to
season one.
Was season one? Well, they did it again. Season one, they certainly did.
They could have ended it right there.
They did it again, like in season four or something like that, where they had like another complete ending. And then the next time we like started to watch the next season, it was like, oh, now you're going to remember everything again. It's like, we're back to this. And I was like, okay. You know, like, it was like, and then we eventually fell out of it. It was a commitment. Those shows were long. But you're right. I mean, that happened with like a lot of shows. That's like even with Scrubs. Like, Scrubs probably my favorite sitcom maybe of all time. And, you know, they pushed it that one season too far, where Zach Braff even tweets like there was no season 9. Or something, you know, he always, you know, says it because it had like probably the most perfect finale of any sitcom I can recall. It had a near perfect finale, and they're like, we're coming back, new cast, the old cast will be in a handful of episodes, it's going to feel completely different, and it's going to be ridiculous. And though it was enjoyable to see the characters again, it was kind of like, should we have just ended on probably the highest note possible? But that's not going to happen. We don't live in that world anymore. We live in the world where you're going to get a sequel 20 years later.
Yeah, that's true.
Or better or worse.
Yeah. Oh, they're making show for better or worse after all these years?
Interesting. It's back.
all those funny family situations in the comics. Well, anyway, I got to – actually, I just looked at the time. I should probably wrap this up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at
that. Get back to work.
All right. Get back to work, sir. Yeah. I mean, hey, Batman 2 is coming. But Lego Batman 2 is even coming out. Lego Batman 2 Family Matters, which I think is hilarious. That's called Family Matters.
Oh, really? I didn't see anything about that.
I know. They announced it at Comic-Con. No one cared. Ralph Garman plays like 3 or 4 different roles. So he talked about it a lot.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. So he was very excited. Awesome. That was great. But, yeah, they didn't give it any real love at Comic-Con. It got like a very quick – like Warner Brothers, like, by the way, Lego Batman 2, which I think is going to come out before the Lego movie 2, which is...
Oh, sure.
Because they can't seem to get that thing back together, unfortunately.
But I think I'm really excited to see that. And I don't care about this franchise. Like, my kids have never been into the Legos, and I haven't either. I don't think they're that great. The Ninjago movie?
Oh,
Lego Ninjago? Like, looks hilarious.
It does. It does. We're excited about that one. We're all Lego in our household, so I've been to all the movies. But that one looks great. Lego Batman was hysterical. So, I mean, I'd say. And the Lego movie's great.
Yeah, I just saw it, and I thought it was funny. I didn't realize how crazy it was with all the, like, the other characters, like Voldemort and things, too. That was nuts.
Well, they left that out of, like, any sort of promotion, I think, probably because they had to. So it wasn't like all of the other – it's kind of like – do you see the Ready Player One trailer?
I did. I don't know how to feel about that yet.
Yeah. Well, did you read the book?
No.
I've skimmed the book, I'll say that, and I like the book.
I don't read books.
I know, just when you have the time. It's kind of the same way, so for they're like going the opposite way. I'm like, we're Batman, Lego Batman, was like, let's hide all the other IPs we're using. They're like, nope, we're throwing all of them out in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
We got Freddy Krueger.
Freddy Krueger, Back to the Future.
Yeah. Though I'm happy to see the Iron Judge return for something. I'm excited. All right.
Sure.
Get back to work.
All right. Folks, we didn't really learn anything, but that's okay.
Well, you learned some things early on in the show.
Right.
But, you know, we learned them too pretty recently as well. So we don't really have a whole lot
to say. We're not going to recap.
No.
We're not going to recap the learning this week.
All right.
But what we will say is, as always, and we mean this from the bottom of our hearts, we hope you enjoyed your lunch. Goodbye, gang.
See you guys. And you never know what's going to happen next week.
And find me the country bumpkin.